Hello and welcome to the Beacon Group's Noon Step Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Sharon and I am an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and to respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. Let's start this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome, but we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you are new to AA or new to the Beacon Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you are not so new and you're looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, have had a spiritual experience, and are willing to sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting except when the speaker is sharing. Also in the chat, you will see an AA quote of the day. The quote source will always be from AA literature. Our speaker will share for 30 minutes on the step of the day, and then we will go into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, please be sure that your environment is quiet and free of distractions. Breakout room discussions end at 12:54, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. Today, I've asked my friend John D. if he would read the 12 steps, please.
We'd be happy to. Thank you. My name's John. I'm an alcoholic. 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you. Thank you, John, very much. Really appreciate that. Today, we will hear a talk on step 405, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves, which will be the fear and sex part, and admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Please give a warm welcome to Paige F. from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. That was a mouthful. Enjoy.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. My name is Paige and I'm an alcoholic. And honestly, I'm so grateful to be here with you guys today and genuinely kind of really grateful to talk about fear and sex. But when I got here, I was not excited to be talking about either of those. I didn't want you to know that I participated in any of those activities, being full of fear. And yeah, absolutely, I'm not going to talk about that other thing. But today, through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and ultimately through a God of my own understanding, man, I have freedom today beyond anything I could have ever imagined. And so the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it gives me directions on how I can overcome fear and how I can develop a sane and sound sex ideal. So let's go to it, if you don't mind. I mean, I'll read it, you know, and so if you don't have your book to hand, don't you worry. But where I'm going to start off is on the very bottom of page 67. And it says, notice the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Miss Jones, the employer, and the wife. And so one of the things that I've learned through, you know, repeated inventory is that inventory just seems to have this natural flow to it. So I don't know about you guys, but when I came to my fourth column of resentments, what I found was that time after time after time, I was making decisions out of fear that put me in a position to be in that resentment, to be upset, to be frustrated, to be angry, to be hurt. And if I was not acting from this place of fear, I wouldn't even been mad at them. I wouldn't have had to write all that stuff in the column too. You know what I mean? And so what then follows is if fear is driving my life, well, I better get free of it. And that's what we get to do in this next section. And it says, this short word somehow touched about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. And see, I wasn't one of those people when I got here that's like, I didn't know I was afraid. I knew I was running by fear. That was all that I knew. See, I'm one of those types of alcoholics. You sober me up and I feel that anxiety. You know that anxiety where it feels like somebody's stabbing your shoulder blades. That's how I feel. I feel like the world is an unsafe place and I don't fit and I don't belong. And honestly, existence is overwhelming for an alcoholic of my type when I'm sober. So for me, that idea that fear was all around me, I knew that. But that was all that I knew. And I did not know that there was a way to get freedom from it, a way to get through it. Now, when it talks about this being an evil and corroding thread, man, I'm wearing this hoodie, right? And imagine that like every 15, every 20 threads made of this hoodie is a thread that corrodes, which eats it away. Well, after a little while, you're going to be very thankful I'm wearing a t-shirt underneath because that is not appropriate. They told me not to swear. It was implied show up with clothes on. You know what I mean? So it just eats away at the fabric of my life, at the fabric of my existence, and I can't even see it. And then it talks about how it set in motion trains of circumstances, which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. And I often say, not once have I ever been like, yes, the misfortune that has befallen me, I fully deserve it. Well, actually, sometimes I will fall into that raging self-pity and self-hatred and be like, yeah, I deserve it. But I didn't think I caused it. You know what I mean? It takes inventory to see that. And I love that it's a train. See, a train, once you get a train going, it's going. And you cannot stop it easily, right? That's part of what makes trains so dangerous. It takes them a long time to stop. So these circumstances that are just going based on me operating and acting out of fear, man, I can't stop it and I want to. And then again, it says, did we not ourselves set the ball rolling? Rude of you to call me out like that. Rude, uncalled for. Yeah. And it says, we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. And I couldn't see it until I got into the inventory process. Then it goes on to say, we reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. And so that's what I do in my column one. I write down those fears. But I always want to emphasize the fears that I'm looking at are what we call self-centered fears. See, I mean, we can, if we need to, look at like snakes and spiders and creepy crawlies. We can, but that's not really what we're after. I'm after that fear that I'm not going to get what I want. I'm not going to get what I want. Or that fear that I'm going to lose something that I have. It's self-centered fear. And so what that fear commonly looks like, and I'm sure nobody can relate to this, y'all are fear-free. But me, I got fear of rejection. I got fear of abandonment. I got a fear that no one will ever love me. I got a fear of success. I got a fear of failure. You'll notice I put myself into a no-win quarter with that. I have a fear of being in a relationship. I got a fear of being alone. I got a fear of sex. It's a real good thing that we got that next part of our inventory to look at. I also got a fear of intimacy. It took me a while to learn that those things are different. You know what I mean? I got a fear of dying. I got a fear that in the depth of who I am, at the very depth of who I am, is unworthy and unlovable. I'm sure no one can relate, but I have that, right? I have a fear of gossip. I have a fear of judgment. I have a fear of criticism. I have fear, right? And so that is what I write, and I get that down. And I, you know, those fears that I wrote in my fourth column of resentments, I can take exactly those ones and more. So, and more, right? But wait, there's more fear, right? And so I can write it down and write it down. And then it says, we asked ourselves why we had them. And for me, that becomes my second column. I ask myself, why do I have this fear? And, you know, I look at it, right? And that second column, it usually informs more fears. Why am I afraid that I'm going to be rejected because it's painful? Why am I afraid that I'm going to be rejected because it means that no one will love me? It means that I'm unworthy. And I see that pain, rejection, unworthiness. I see that those are other fears that I can continue to add. That second column elaborates and illuminates, and it helps me to see truly just how run my life is by fear. But I've also done a different type of fear inventory, where what I've done is I wrote down the fear, and then I asked myself why I had them. And then I asked myself why. And then I asked myself why. And it was a type of inventory. I don't know what it's called, but I called it the because inventory. Because I'm afraid of rejection. Because it means that no one will ever love me. Because I need to feel loved to feel worthy. Because on my own, I feel unworthy. Because I feel a separateness from God. And when I did that form of fear inventory, almost invariably, now you guys have your own experience, but I'll tell you mine. Almost invariably, that last because was because I had a sense of separateness from God. And see, I, on my own power, I'm that flimsy reed. I, on my own power, have never been able to overcome fear. I've never been able to overcome self. And it says that here. It says, wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Me relying on me fails me. So for me, I do a third column. I do a third column where I write on how me relying on my own power has failed me in terms of this fear. And that is where I see I've set the ball rolling time and time again. And so often what that looks like for me. So again, I'm just going to use rejection, because that seems to be one that a lot of us have. Boy, I hope you guys aren't going to reject me today. Right. And so let's say I got this fear of rejection. I don't know about you, but when I live on self-will, inevitably I'm drinking again. And I don't know about you, but I'm not a fun drunk. I am not a polite drunk. I have burnt my relationships to the ground. The way that I live in my active alcoholism, of course you're going to reject me. Again, I don't know about you, but even sober, when I show up to relationships, I need you to like me for me to be okay. And so I'm trying to get that worth and that validation. See, I'm not really a people pleaser, because I don't care if you're pleased. I'm an approval seeker. I care if you like me. And I was told to watch my language. I have a different word that I use for it, but I'm watching my language. So I'm an approval seeker. So I need you to like me and think well of me for me to be okay. Tell me I'm worthy. Tell me I have value, right? And that's draining. See, I'm trying to seek from you only that which I can get from God, and you're not God. It's never enough. So you give me a parade. And the moment that parade is over, I have that feeling like, oh, is that all? Oh, right? I need more. Also, I don't know about you. I'm so afraid of rejection. I'll reject you first. I'm so afraid of rejection that I'll isolate myself. I don't want to start new friendships. I don't want to start new relationships. I don't know about you, but when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't look you in the eye. I could look at that square on the floor right in front of me. And oh gosh, I was intimately acquainted with that square. And you guys seemed happy and sober at the same time. And I couldn't talk to you. I didn't think I could relate to you. Because I thought surely you'd reject me. So where do I want to build relationships? With people who are like me, who are unhealed. Right? And these people, ironically, who are more likely to reject me because they are unhealed just like I am unhealed and they are hurting in the ways that I am hurting. See, on self-will, I'm codependent as heck. On self-will, it's all about what I can get. On self-will, I don't know how to apologize. I don't know how to amend. I don't know how to make it right. I'll stuff my feelings and have an explosion of anger. And you're like, girl, that's a little much. And you reject me. And I can't see those patterns. I can't see that living on my will, me trying to run my life puts me in a position to create these fears, and it makes these fears worse. And it's so self-reliance was good, not my life, but maybe for others, as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence. That wasn't me. I don't relate to that. I don't know her. Who is she? I never, right? But it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. See, I'm not one of those alcoholics that stands on the pile of mess and thinks I'm so great. I'm one of those alcoholics that hides under the pile of my mess and thinks I'm the biggest loser that ever lived. But regardless, what I'm thinking about me is in my mess and I'm not cleaning it up. And so it says, perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. And that's a real callback to that third step decision that I made. See, in that third step, I got fired from the management position of my life. I managed my life to an unmanageable position. Here we are. I am fired, right? And so now I'm on this basis. I'm no longer in management. God is in the upper management position of my life. And I'm working for God. I'm showing up for God. And what that looks like is diving into the inventory process. And for somebody like me, being of love and service in all that I do, it says we are in the world to play the role he assigns. Now, if you remember in that third step, the actor and the director. See, I'm not the director. I'm just the actor. I got my script and I got my lines. And what that is these 12 steps is a way of life. That's what I'm doing. And I'm doing that to the best of my ability. That is the role that I really believe God has assigned for me. And this is a promise. Man, did you know we got a fear promise? That's the coolest thing. That's the coolest thing, right? It says just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him. Does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? That is powerful. So what is that? Like any promise in the book, like the step 9 promises, we love those, but they only come true when I'm at step 9 and actively doing my 9th step amends. That's when they come true. So this promise comes true, but it comes true when I'm doing this work and to the extent that I rely on God. And I do my best to do what I really believe God's will is for me. Again, if I'm not sure what God's will is for me, I'll give you a hint. It's probably love and service. It's probably that. It's probably not telling the bank teller off. It's probably not flipping the bird to the guy in traffic. Probably not that. It's probably helping the alcoholic that's in front of me. That's usually what it is. But the thing is, calamity. A lot of times I will create my calamity. You can call me Calamity Page. You know what I mean? I will take a little molehill and I'm like, oh, it's a mountain. Here we go, right? I stub my toe, it's calamity. But when we talk about calamity and we see that word calamity in earlier in the book, we're talking about, you know, our friend Fitzmayo, his calamities. He talks about fatal illness, suicide, business failure. Those were calamities. Calamities is that life stuff. So as hard and painful as life is, that gets matched with that serenity of God. And that is powerful. That is freedom. And that has been my experience. I've had calamity in my life, and invariably it has been matched with serenity to the extent that I rely on God and do as I think He would have me. Now it goes on to say, we never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. And see, that's the thing. Whenever I'm faced with fear, whenever I'm faced with the stuff that I don't know, I don't think I can do, it's important for me to remember I'm not the one doing it. I, in Alcoholics Anonymous, my goal is to get me out of the way. As much of me out of the way, that bondage of self, that selfishness and self-centeredness through these actions, and let God work through me. That's all I'm doing. So I'm not, and my experience is I'm not doing the heavy lifting. I'm taking some actions, and I'm taking some rigorous actions on a daily basis. But I'm not doing the heavy lifting. I'm letting God work through me. And it says, we asked Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. And once we commence to outgrow fear. And what I write on in my fourth column is I say that prayer, and I write on that fourth column, and I write about how God reliance can overcome that fear. And I swap that third column. See, if I'm in resent or in fear of rejection in that third column, if I'm going to relapse, well, on God's will, what would God have me do? What would God have me be? Well, I'm going to be fully active in the 12 steps, reliant on God. I'm not going to relapse. I'm going to show up and create and cultivate relationships in the spirit of love and service. I'm going to actively seek value, worth, attention, affection from God and channel that to you, because I'm just trying to be the channel. I'm going to show up with what can I give, not what I can get. I'm going to make amends. I'm going to pray. I'm going to meditate. I'm going to take regular inventory. So I'm showing up with the best version of myself. And the deeper level. The deeper level is, even if I am rejected, even if that fear happens, even if I rely on God, I will be okay. And I will use that experience to help others. And that has been my experience. All right, now about sex. All right. And I love it. I love it. Because it's one of those things, if you guys are ever in a meeting where you read through the book and you go through it and there's, you finish up fears, and then there's that like awkward pause, and who's going to read now about sex? And it's like, ooh, it's a little awkward and uncomfortable, and we want to make jokes, and oh, so why are we looking at it? And that's why we're looking at it. That's why we're looking at this area of my life, because that is where I have the most guilt, the most shame, and the most capacity to harm others. That is where those secrets live. That is where that stuff comes from. I mean, other places too. Now, also, I don't know about you, but I'll tell you about me. I resented my ex and others. You know what I mean? Like, I was not too happy with them. I thought they were the jerks, right? I thought for sure they were the jerks. And then again, I don't know about you. I got some fears. I got fears around sex. I got fears around intimacy. I got fears around being alone. I've got fears about being in a relationship. I got fears around this area of my life. Heck, I might even have fears around writing inventory around sex. You know, you can put that in the sex or in the fear inventory. How practical, right? And so I got fears. So it's one of the most wonderful things that I get to look at that stuff, those resentments, and I get to see those relationships in a new way. And then I get to look at those fears and I get to see them in a new way. And now I'm perfectly ready to go into sex and to look at this area of my life. And it says many of us needed an overhauling there. So if you're here and you're like, oh goodness, I need an overhauling, you're not alone. Many of us did. I love this. This book was written. It was published in 1939. It was pen to paper, well, typed out in 37, 38. And we're going to read some stuff that's incredibly open and incredibly refreshing. And it's not weird and like sex is bad. Like, we're not coming at this from that angle. It says it's so easy to get way off the track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Sex is bad. Lie back and think of the queen and think of baseball. Bad, bad, bad. Shame, 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 right? That's what it's saying. We're like, no, let's not do that. And then it says, then we have the Christ voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. they think we don't have enough of it, or it isn't the right kind. So really heavy focus, the exact opposite. So the extremes, right? They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for its fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. Now, if you're ever looking for a drag queen name, like if you want to be a drag queen or burlesque or something like that, we can do that. We have freedom. But a wonderful name is Welcome to the Stage, our next performer, the not-so-straight myth, Pepper Diet. So just if you're looking for a persona. Nope. All right. Cool. All right. So it says, we want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. So we're not trying to tell you what to do. And I love this. It says we all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. Not we'd hardly be alcoholic. Human. All have sex problems. So it says, what can we do about them? Right? And that's the thing. We're taking this really sane, sound view of this. And the purpose of why we're looking at this is to create and come up with a sane, sound ideal for our future sex life. And that's the whole purpose of looking at this, to come up with a sex ideal. And when I got here, I didn't know what a sex ideal was. I thought it had to do with the other person. Right. When I was in my early sobriety, I had a friend and he would talk about the gal with the big brown eyes. And then so I started talking about like Mr. Tall, Dark and Handsome with the real thick wallet in response. But it has nothing to do with the other person. It has everything to do with me. It has everything to do with who I am meant to be before, during and after a relationship. So here's what we do. It says we reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. And see, I don't know about you, how I set up my paper, and it's okay if mine is different. If how I set up my columns looks a little different than yours, you're right, I'm wrong. Absolutely. So what I do is in column one, I put who I hurt. In column two, what I look at is, I look at, you know, where was I at fault? See, it's no longer about them. And I'm putting down, later on, we'll see where it says, we look at, was it selfish or not? I'm looking at any area where I have been selfish. Was I flirting with guys for drinks? That's pretty selfish. I should maybe put that down. And we can group. I mean, ideally, we're putting it all down. It doesn't matter if I don't remember their names. It doesn't matter if I do have to group. We just get it down and we look at it. And then I look at where I was selfish, dishonest, and considerate. Not was I, but where was I? So I was. And then I look at whether I aroused jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness. And you know, I can do that in that other person. And I can do that in myself by creating this insecurity and this fear. And I can do that in a third party who is uninvolved, right? So if I'm with somebody or I'm engaging with somebody who's in a relationship, it's very likely I would have aroused jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness in their partner, right? And what I do is in the next paragraph, it says, we ask God. And anytime in this book, it says, we ask for me, that is a prayer. So I say this prayer before writing on my fourth column. We ask God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. And then I write on, what should I have done instead? And what should I have done instead informs my sex ideal. And I want you to know, I sponsor a lot of human beings. I sponsor a lot of people. And I sponsor a lot of people who have the depth and breadth of human experience. And the human sexuality and human relationships. So I sponsor people who've been married, and I sponsor people who've been polyamorous. And time after time, I've found some real similarities in almost anyone's and everyone's sex ideal. One of the things that is a common thread is that I need to be fully dependent upon God. I need to be fully engaged in these 12 steps and as a way of life. Because I don't know about you, when I'm drinking, I am not wife material. You know what I'm saying? Like, I am a codependent hostage situation in a dumpster that's on fire material, but I'm not really wife material, right? It looks like, for me, being able to be honest in a kind and loving way, especially when it's difficult. it looks like being, like if I would have been selfish, dishonest, and considerate, goodness, what do I got to do? Be selfless, honest, considerate. Man, if I have a, and I did, I had a habit of just like ghosting relationships. So what that means is I need to communicate honestly and transparently as the relationship ends, right? And so for me then, like, I don't know about you, looking at some of that stuff, I gotta be nice. I gotta be considerate. I gotta think of their needs. I gotta like communicate honestly. I gotta say when, hey, I don't like it when you don't do the dishes as well. I gotta say that. Rather than say that, you know what I mean? That is not something that I can do on my own power. So for me, what I've found time and time again is a sex ideal is not something that I put on the shelf and I leave over there. See, what, like I'm aware of the time, so I might not be able to read through all of it, but it says we let God take us to better things. So what I do is I take my sex ideal and I turn it to prayers and I let it inform my prayer life. God, I pray that you would allow me to be selfless, considerate, honest, and humble in all that I do. I pray that I would be fully dependent on you and that I would channel your love and your attention and your care to those who need it most. Because I can't do those things on my own power, so why wouldn't I ask God? And so again, what I love is in that next paragraph, it says, we remembered always that our sex powers, again, if you're wanting to start a band, I'm just saying that might be a good name. Welcome to the stage, sex powers. Yeah. Right. So again, just some options if you're needing a creative outlet. Sex powers were God-given and therefore good. And this was written in the 30s. Good. This area of our life is good. It's not bad. But it comes with responsibility. So it's neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor despised and low. And it says, whatever our ideal turns out to be. See, I'm not dictating it to anyone. I'll help sponsees write it out because I help them when it's in their fourth column. But I'm not making up my own things for them. I'm writing what I hear them say. Our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow towards it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm. And what I love about going through this is, of course, this is very specifically focused on this area of our life. But I got to be willing to make amends where I've caused harm in any area of my life. And then it says, provided we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. Which this tells us how we deal with problems. I don't know about you, but I just would deal with them by obsessing and being in my mind about them and just worrying. Again, a lot of fear. And so this is how we deal with all problems in meditation. And that means that I spend that time in quiet, in God's presence. And then it says, we ask, oh man, that's a prayer. What a person in here, right? We ask God what we should do about each specific matter. So I take that to prayer. God, what would you have me do? And it says the right answer will come, comma, if we want it. There are times in my life I've absolutely not wanted the right answer, but it will come. Now it says God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with other persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. So we're not here to say like, you have to go live in a monastery up in a mountain, or you need to have an OnlyFans. You know what I mean? There is a middle ground that we can find and a God-centered path that we can find. But that God-centered path is not one that I live up to on my own. And here's what we have. It is a warning. It says, suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal and stumble. We might, because I can't live up to this on my own power. Does this mean we're going to get drunk? Some people tell us so, but this is only a half truth. It depends on us and our motives. If we are sorry for what we have done and have the honest desire to let God, see, it is God that is doing the heavy lifting. God, take us to better things. We believe we will be forgiven and we will have learned our lesson. And again, through that prayer, through taking it to prayer and meditation, through making amends where I've done harm, God takes me to better things. And here is the warning. And there's a couple places it says, if I do not do this or I do this, I will drink again. It says, if we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. We are not theorizing. These are facts out of our experience. I'm right on time, but let me just wrap up with the last paragraph, and I won't be longer than a minute. It says, to sum up about sex, it says, we earnestly pray for the right ideal. So again, I'm taking that sex ideal to my prayer life. I'm asking God, what do I need to do for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity and the strength to do the right thing? Then it says, if sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge, when to yield would mean heartache. And again, that's what I love about going through this work, these directions around sex, because it tells me what I've got to do about anything. Prayer, meditation, inventory, make amends. And if I am struggling with anything, and of course, with this area of my life, go help others. My life depends on it. So again, I want to thank you for allowing me to speak, allowing me to be of service. It's been so wonderful to be here with you guys today. Thank you so much.